We've been looking at these passages that are given to us in the Bible that address sticky situations in the church and address some very practical things to consider. And so I want to draw your attention to 1 Timothy chapter 5 this evening, beginning in verse 3. I know that you'll be in prayer throughout this week for the many, many who are sick in this congregation. I don't know that it's at epidemic proportions, but I think it's probably close. I was looking around last week, and you know, we had 12 families that either had babies or are soon to have babies. And I looked around last week, and I think two of those families were here on Sunday morning, beginning to figure out where everybody sits. So just those 10 families that were gone accounted for 44 people that weren't here, and that's folks that I know about, and there's a lot of sickness in those those families. So keep praying, and Lord willing, by Easter they'll all be here. Any case, we hope before that. But so verse 3, 1 Timothy chapter 5. Honor widows who are really widows, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents. For this is good and acceptable before God. Now she who is really a widow and left alone, trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives, and these things command that they be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, and if she has lodged strangers, and if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering around from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity for the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that they may relieve those who are really widows. Amen. The situation here seems to be a situation where Timothy, as in the town of Ephesus, and there's a need to provide for the widows and orphans in that town. Now, why would they do that? I think that it's pretty simple, that these are Christian individuals, and they know that the Bible teaches that you and I ought to be very careful, very mindful to care for those who are poor among us. In the Old Testament, caring for the poor was a command given repeatedly, particularly to care for the widows and the orphans. Now, it seems like what they have done is that they have set up a list of widows to receive financial support, perhaps on a monthly basis. Verse 9 says that references a number, that they not be taken into the number, but other translations say that they not be put on the list. So apparently they have devised a list. They've looked around. They've trying to find which individuals in poverty need to be receiving support from the church. And you have to remember that that was a day, an age when there wasn't government help, there wasn't Medicaid, there wasn't Medicare, there wasn't Social Security. And so there were very significant and prevalent needs in their midst. And so they want to provide for those needs. Now, it seems like what has happened, however, is that word has perhaps gotten around that there's a list down at the First Church of God in Ephesus. And if you attend that church, you could be put on the list. It's a list that gives out money. It's a list to provide for the poor. And you and I don't have to be really rocket scientists to figure out what would happen in even this town if word spread around that there's a list down at the First Church of God, and they give a monthly allowance out to those who are in need. And if you go down there, you get your name on the list, you'll get some money. We have some idea what would happen because it's known in this town that we take up another's offering, apparently, the first Sunday of each month. And the week following the other's offering is a particularly busy week in comparison to the others for our office staff. People tend to know where there's money to be had. And so, again, we work very diligently here to try to get it into the right hands. But that seems to be what's happening. And so Paul needs to give some instructions about who is to receive money. Because, again, the list is drawing all kinds of people. It's interesting, at my previous church, I lived behind the church in a parsonage. And people in town knew that that was the church parsonage. And every now and then I'd get a knock on the door, or they'd ring my doorbell, and they'd ask for money. They always needed $20 to go see somebody in the hospital. Seems to be that was the story. $20 to go to Charlotte to see somebody who was just in a wreck. And so, every now and then you'd give money. And if you gave the money, almost certainly that week you'd get three or four other people in similar situations needing $20. And it didn't take long to figure out that there's a network in this town. They know each other. And so it seems that maybe that's what's happening here. So Paul says, here's what I want you to do. You need to give to the widows. Don't stop giving, but he gives them three characteristics they ought to be looking for. The first is that it is a widow indeed. Verse 4, it is a widow without any family to provide for them. Now, he says if there's family, family needs to take care of that situation. But if there isn't family, then that's one qualification you need to look for. If there's family to take care of them, the family needs to care for them. And in fact, if there are people in the church who have people in need in their families and they won't care for them, verse 8 says that that person has denied the faith and they are worse than an unbeliever. Now, that's a heavy passage. I'm not going to drive that, but you just let that weigh on you. And you see how important it is for Paul, for you and I who call ourselves Christians, to provide for those in our families that have legitimate needs. Now, again, there's needs and there's legitimate needs. And I'll get to that in a minute. He says, but these are widows indeed. These are, first of all, they need to be people that have no one else to provide for them. And then secondly, they need to be godly women. And I think partially this is to weed out all the people who perhaps are signing up and joining the church for ulterior motives. Verse 4 says that these are women that show piety. These are women verse 5. These are women who trust the Lord. They pray night and day. Verse 9 says that, I'm all over the place. I'm looking for it. Verse 10. Says that they do good works. They've brought up children. They've cared for children. They've lodged strangers. They've washed the saints' feet. They've relieved the afflicted. They've been diligent in every good work. So not only are they widows indeed without anyone to provide for them, but these are also individuals that have a reputation and have had a reputation for godliness. Not to give to everybody, but you're to give, Paul says, to those who are godly. And then in verse 11, he says, but refuse the younger widows. At verse 9, pardon me, he says, and don't give to any widow under the age of 60. So she's got to be a widow. No one else to care for her. She's got to be a godly woman. And she's got to be over the age of 60. Now, I think the 60 is probably arbitrary for Paul. Again, there are limited resources. And so it seems to me that that might be a number that he's plucked out of the air. The understanding is if she's under the age of 60, she could remarry. There might also be a possibility for her to work in some way and provide for herself. So those are the three characteristics that Paul gives. Widow indeed, no one to provide for her. She is a godly woman and has a reputation for godliness, and she is over the age of 60. Now, why would Paul give these three characteristics? And I think one we've touched on thus far, and that is simply the issue of practicality. There are limited resources. This is not a church with significant amounts of funds. And every church at some level has limited resources. So there has to be some narrowing down and getting to the most serious and legitimate needs. But I think the other reason Paul sees is a spiritual aspect. So there's a practical aspect, but there's also a spiritual aspect, which is verse 11 through 15, where he essentially says, if you give to women who can work, if you give to women who can marry, you're essentially supporting them in their idleness, and in their idleness, they will perhaps turn to gossips and busybodies instead of marrying and taking care of families and doing things that are profitable. They'll turn to be lazy gossipers. And he says some have already turned aside in this way and followed after Satan. Now, I'm so glad Paul said that and not me. You understand the difference, right? All right. That's what Paul said. He said, ladies will turn aside, and if you give to them in this way, it will spoil them spiritually. And so he says there's a spiritual aspect to observe here. And I think that's very, very important. In all the things that we do, we are called to take in the spiritual side of things. You know, a physician isn't always in the place where they know best what they need. Sometimes those who are spiritual need to help those who are unspiritual and give them what they need. Again, if you go to a doctor, you're not always in the best position to tell the doctor what you need. I mean, you go to the doctor, and a lot of people just want to go to the doctor and get pain pills. And a good doctor needs to look at them and say, I understand it hurts, but I'm not going to give you any more pain pills. That's not good for your health. And in the same way, a church, if they really do care about individuals, sometimes they have to look at people and say, I know that you think that you need financial support from us, but what you really need is financial guidance from us. There's a church in New York City, and they're able to do this because they have a significant number of staff. We're talking about probably 40 or 50 or 60 associates. It's a very large church, and they're able to do this. But when people come to that church seeking benevolence, when they come to that church seeking help, they are assigned a financial counselor. And before they receive any help, they go to the counselor. The counselor works with their budget. They budget everything that that person has in their life. And then they have a clause on their webpage where they say, we may ask you, if you're seeking financial help from us, we may ask you to get rid of your cable, to get rid of other non-essentials, maybe your cell phone, but we want to help you budget your money, and we want to help you get better. Now, if we work with you, and we work through your budget, and we see you have a legitimate need, we will help your legitimate need. But you first have to submit to giving us an honest accounting of your finances so that we can help you learn to budget your money. Now, we're not in a position at the moment as a church to have that kind of policy. We don't really have the staffing to follow that. But that's a good ideal, I think. And if you had the staffing, that would be a great ideal, because a lot of times people don't need the money. What they need is a job. And they don't need the handout, but they need an incentive to go to work. And what they need, if anything, is financial guidance from people who know how to manage their money. So what Paul is saying is that there's a practical aspect here, but you need to also be mindful of the spiritual needs of the individual. And giving somebody money isn't always in their spiritual best interest. Now, I feel that way, there's a deep part of me when I give to somebody. I watch the Hallmark movies, not a lot of them, but there's not enough killing in them. But I watch some of the Hallmark movies, and you have that picture that Hallmark paint sometimes, that picture of the world. And so when I give sometimes to people, you can see yourself actually laying there in the casket. As you give this money, there you are laying in the casket, and there at your funeral, and somebody stands up, maybe prompted, and they say, before you bury him, I just want to testify about the time many years ago when I was down to my last penny and I was starving to death, and he gave me money, and because he gave me money, I found the Lord, and I've done such wonderful things, and that was the turning point in my life, and before you bury him, I just want to testify to that event. You just think that as you give, a Hallmark movie is going to unfold because of your giving. But I think Paul would say, snap out of it. It doesn't always happen that way, but the way it often works. So given that, what are some principles for us? And again, I don't know that Paul is giving the hard and fast, and that this should be applied to the letter in every church in every age. Because I really do believe that the Lord has at least spoken to me at times, and I've given personally to people that probably don't fit those characteristics. And I do feel like the Spirit was moving me to do that. But at least as a body, if you take what Paul has to say, what are some principles for you and I? I think one principle that comes out of this strongly is that families ought to care for families. I think that stands the test of time. Families ought to care for families. My parents and my wife's parents are the problems of my wife and myself, first of all. Now, if we reach the point where we couldn't care, then maybe we might ask for charity. And I'm not saying that they're all your responsibility, and it's not Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security's problem. If they've paid in and they're receiving, take that. I'm not saying deny government help. I'm not suggesting that. But their care is our responsibility. It's not your responsibility. It's not the responsibility of the congregations that they're in. It's our responsibility. I remember Haddon Robinson, a professor of mine, talking, and he said that his father came down with dementia, and he said he got a call from his dad. He was living in Texas. His dad was up in New York, and his dad shared with him what the doctor had shared regarding his physical place. And he said, I got on a plane, I flew to New York, I got my dad, I brought him back to Texas to live with my family. He said, as the disease progressed, he said, my dad would have violent episodes with my children. And he said, and that became a very significant issue, that my kids were no longer safe with my dad as a dementia progressed into Alzheimer's. He said, so I had to put him into a care facility. He said, for several years, it took one-third of my salary, 33% of my salary went to that care facility to provide for my father for those years. Now, what's interesting is this. He said, when I was in town for those several years, there was only 2 days when I was in town that I did not visit my father in that care facility. He said, but there was never a day during that time that I didn't feel guilty for having put him there. And maybe you're there as a person. I just wanted to share that. This was a godly man. And so there is an amount of guilt that with him that even though there's a violence factor and I can't have him around my kids, he's no longer safe, there was a great guilt in providing, even if it was at 1/3 of his salary. But again, the point, major point there is that our parents are our responsibility. And I think that you see that coming out. There's an eternal principle there. They cared for you when you were young. You care for them as they get older, as they need the help. And I think that's an eternal principle. I think another principle here is that if you can work, the Bible says work. If you can work, work. I remember Adrian Rogers, the great preacher of a previous generation, talking once, and he said something. He said, sometimes we confuse work with employment. He said, it's not the same thing. And so somebody says, hey, I can't find any work. What they mean is, I can't find anybody to pay me to work. He said, but here's the thing. Now, he's going back to the 70s and 80s, and I know there are legal ramifications here, and this might not work in our culture. I don't know. He said, but here's the thing. If you'll work for free, somebody will shortly pay you to work. He said, if you'll get off the couch, and if you'll go out, and if you'll work around your neighborhood, and if you'll just stay busy working, sooner or later, somebody will see you working, and they'll see your work ethic, and they'll start paying you to work. He said, the quickest way to get a job that pays is to take a job that doesn't pay. And I thought about that. And again, I know there are some legal ramifications here and you know, and that kind of thing. And so probably not every place would let you work for free. Probably none of them were. That might be illegal. I don't know. But I'm just thinking, you know, if you were, let's say, a contractor, that wouldn't be hard for Tony Shelton to imagine being a contractor. But let me try to imagine this. If a person came to me and they said, you know what, I'm drawing unemployment, and I'll draw it for a while more. I just want to be an apprentice here. You don't need to pay me. I just want to learn to do what you want, and I'll go get the food, and I'll do the menial task, and now and then you can let me up on the ladder, drive some nails. I just want to learn. I just want to learn how to be a carpenter. And I'll do it for free. And if I'm any good at it in 6 months, you hire me. I think legally, now there may be some legal reasons why that couldn't happen. But I think a pretty honest person would just, I think they'd take you up on that. I just think they'd probably take you up on that. If you were any good, I think if you worked for nothing, you'd soon be working for something. But the principle here is work. If you can work, work. Again, you know, the Bible says if you don't work, you don't eat. Work. And I think that's an eternal principle. Work is value. It's interesting here. It's interesting here that it says nothing about the guys. It's all about the women. Why don't the guys get anything? Yeah, I think the assumption is, again, and that's a culture where you didn't have employment issues, to be honest. I mean, you go out in the field and work, you could go do this, you could go do that. You didn't have a government saying, you know, you can't work, you can't hire this person, you can't hire. But again, at least in that case, at least in that culture, the guys were called to work. And I think that that's just a principle that would come out of that. A third principle. Those who are righteous ought to receive the priority. A church ought not give to people who are unrighteous or who are not members at the expense of the widows that are in their midst. And that's what he keeps saying. These need to be righteous people. These need to be holy people. Don't be giving to those who have a reputation that is less than godly. Give to the godly. Now, again, I think a church, you know, if you have the resources, you give to people who are in need that may not fit that bill. But those who are workers in the church, those who are widows indeed, those who have served the Lord, ought not be neglected for those who are not. Those characteristics. And again, you know, there's two kickbacks here. Because in one sense you say, then why do we ship, why do we give so much money to people who are way over there? Why not give more to those who are in need in our midst? And I think the kickback on that is that, in America at least, I mean, let me back up. You realize in the Bible, I did a study on this a while back, every time it talks about giving to the poor, and it qualifies that, it's always giving to them food and clothing. Never even goes so far as shelter. Certainly doesn't go so far as firewood and whatever else. The poor were always those without food and clothing. So when you give, you ought to give to that degree. So we give outside, but again, in my thinking, you ought not even give to missions at the expense of neglecting those with significant needs that fit that bill in your midst. Those, I think, do get the priority according to this passage. One of the things that is true of Christians, and Mark Twain pointed this out, and I think it's true of everybody, though, but I think it's particularly true of us, again, is sometimes we can be guilty of great injustices because we have bleeding heart syndrome. Mark Twain, who wasn't a Christian, but he was an astute person who understood how people think. He wrote a short story once about two brothers named Edward and George Benton, and they were orphans, and They were raised by their grandparents, the Brants. And Edward went off, went astray pretty early in life. And so he got into gambling, and he got into trouble in school, and he became really, really a bad apple, really. And George was just a straight as an arrow. He was everything Edward was not. And so George grew up. He got some schooling. He stayed in school. He did the best that he could. But Edward and George fell in love with the same girl. And the girl ended up marrying Edward because Edward, you know, he needed somebody. And Edward was the bad boy, and Edward needed her. George was good. He didn't need her. But Edward needed her, so he got the girl. And George ended up getting married, ended up having three children, ended up working as a teller in the bank. And their parents died. And, of course, Edward owed a lot of gambling debts and was behind on his rent. So the parents just gave most of the inheritance to Edward because George didn't need it. And Edward needed the money. And so Edward got the girl, and Edward got most of the inheritance because Edward needed the money. George was good. And anyway, George is working as a teller in the bank, and the bank gets robbed by masked bandits. George won't open the safe. He ends up getting shot, and his widow, the churches take up an offering, and they get her about $40, and so there's money for George's widow. The widow has to move from the house into an attic apartment, but Edward later gets caught. He was one of the bandits responsible for George's death. And he gets sentenced to death, but in prison, he finds the Lord. He gets saved in prison. And Twain says that till the day he died, there was little old church ladies bringing flowers and cookies and desserts to Edward's cell Brother Edward Sell making his last days memorable. And everybody forgot, nobody can recall where George's widow and three kids are at. And he was pointing that out to say, in his opinion, that's what church people tend to do. They neglect the need. They neglect the victim, and somebody can get saved, and somebody can have a radical testimony, and they can have a winning personality, and the church will love them and embrace them and love on them. But oftentimes, you neglect the people in need. And according to Twain, of course, and I think you see that too, it was George's widow that the church ought to have been sending baked goods to and dessert and taking care of and sending flowers to his three little kids. But again, they embraced Edward because he had this wonderful salvation experience. There's a tendency among Christians, and I think maybe that's what Paul is getting at, to not act justly in what we do with the Lord's resources. And we give to somebody with a testimony. We give to somebody with the greatest lowdown story. We give to somebody who can cry the hardest at the altar. But we need to give to those who are legitimately in need. First to those who have served the Lord. Again, I think that that's an endearing principle. Those who have served the Lord indeed ought not be neglected by a local body. They ought to be served. And as we are the hands and feet to the world, I think that's what Paul is getting. Be the hands and feet to the world, but do not neglect those who have served in our midst. I think that's the principle involved here. Amen. Will you stand with me?